Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Game Day Podcasts from TalkSport. Subscribe on Acast or wherever you get your podcasts. Game Day, the record book.
His shirt off, runs to the crowd. He's delighted and he should be.
Sloppy defending from Aston Villa, and you cannot afford to defend like that when people like Danny Ings are lurking in the penalty area.
Jamie Vardy, you beauty! The Premier League's deadliest assassin has done it once again.
Hello everybody and welcome to yet another edition of the Game Day podcast, the Game Day record book podcast indeed, with me, Danny Kelly, joined for this festive, I don't suppose it'll be very festive in its content edition. He's been one of the regulars, helped us make this podcast the award-winning and universally admired behemoth that it is. Mark Webster, a legendary broadcaster, music fan, football impresario, all the rest of it. Hello, Mark.
Thank you, Dan. I'll take all of those titles and work with them. You're very
thank
kind.
Thank you. Well, start from there and see where you go.
So where we go from there.
Alongside him, a former professional footballer, coach these days, as well as being one of the wise men of the media, former Cardiff City, he'll go through other clubs himself, and Wales International. I'm using his name very correctly here, because we talked about it, Daniel Gabadon.
Thank
Hello,
you
Daniel.
Very much, Danny. How are you? I'll work with that as well.
I feel like I'm your mum calling you Daniel, but that's your preferred nomenclature, so we'll go with that, though it's going to cause confusion in the course of this show, because I'm Danny Kelly, he's Daniel Gabadon. Danny stroke Daniel Ings will get mentioned a bit later on. Let's start with him, actually. We'll start with our heroes of the week. Daniel, who do you want to choose?
Being an ex-defender, I never like to see strikers score, but I've got to go with Miguel Almirón.
Finally,
you could say that. I think everybody's obviously been willing him to kind of get off the mark, and £21 million later, 27 appearances, 2,190 minutes, 46 shots, and 11 months later, he's finally got the winner.
Now, look, let me ask you about this, Daniel. His fellow professional, of course, the opposition will just be going, this fella's never going to score. What about in the Newcastle dressing room? Do you think this will become an absolute laughing stock over the months? Do you think they've had his pants down over it?
I think he would have been getting a bit of stick, to be fair. Not too much, though, because obviously confidence is a big thing when it comes to strikers. So I think.
But he's
probably
tried so hard. Yeah. I mean, he really is a trier, the fella, isn't he?
He is, and credit to him. I think he's a really good player. And it's not easy being an attacking player in Newcastle's team, the way they set up. You don't see a lot of the ball. At times when I've seen him playing, you know, he works ever so hard. At times you've seen him picking the ball up on his own box, getting to the edge of the opposition box, and I think he's got no energy left to actually score. So I think that's part
of the
issue.
I've seen him play a couple of times up close and personal. And let's be honest with you, if anyone is getting a Christmas card off of him, off of Almirón, is Joe Linton, who, I mean, he's actually got the number 9
wrong.
Shirt.
You're not wrong. He's getting
one goal in 18 games. That's his actual job.
Yes, the sash now changes, moves from one shoulder to another, doesn't it? And we need to compliment as well the various Twitter sites which have been following Miguel Almirón's travails so closely. And every Saturday, Sunday or Monday, they say, has Almirón scored yet? And everyone would go, no. And I think the first response this week was from Newcastle itself.
Yes.
Yeah, the official website, yes.
Do you like the idea of this work experience kid who's been employed for 2 months,
poised,
just on his finger, hanging, dangling. No, there's no. He's dead now. He had to hit it with his other hand to make it work.
Well, Joe Ellington's lucky, isn't he? Because he got a he got that early goal, the winner against, sorry, against Tottenham, Danny, didn't he?
Yes, well put.
So otherwise, I think he'd be next.
I'll tell you what, though. Newcastle United, we've already discussed, a slightly disjointed squad.
Yes.
Forward players who can't score and the rest of it. Top half of the table now.
Nice.
Steve Bruce, you sometimes think he's a vunkier old Santa Claus and all the rest of it. No, you're, of course, the one who looks like Santa Claus.
Thank you very much. And I'll take the avuncular as well.
But he's actually doing something amazing there. Let me ask you who your hero of the week is, Mark.
Mr. Andrew Robertson, nice and easy, simple as that, because, of course, he starred in the most exciting football game of the weekend. The Club World Cup. I mean, the Club World Cup, it was enough to knock the hit list off of the BBC One's evening schedule, because it went into extra time.
Or as I call it, the charity shield for overseas people.
Yeah. Yes, indeed you do.
6 million viewers.
But Andrew Robertson, double whammy. There's this thing where footballers like to cover their mouths now in case they're caught on the 50,000 cameras available at any ground saying something inappropriate or
God,
wrong.
God, it's pathetic, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. It looks like the halitosis breakout in football. It's almost uncontrollable.
And it started when you were playing, Dan. It's not that long ago.
Yeah, it was there.
Oh, you were going to be all
wrong. Because you don't want to be caught saying something wrong. So, Andrew Robertson, who clearly thinks he's got a free hit on a Saturday evening in the Club World Cup in Doha, has gone for it. Rafinha, the leather-hatted Flamengo right-back.
Scrum half.
I do like the fact that the nominated outhouser.
Yeah.
And obviously I've just adapted the phrase for appropriately. He was fantastic. I love the game of football. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
But he was hilarious because he did so many wrong, right things. But of course, he gets Mane a card. And Andrew Robertson basically is caught. Not only didn't he have his hand over his face, he couldn't have his hands further away from his face, as he pointed out, almost staring down the lens. Sadio, don't worry, I'll get him.
Yeah. I love that. I absolutely
love that. It's gold, isn't it?
That. Quite. Yeah. That's really up there with it. It's the first real on-pitch indication we've had with microphones since Tony Adams, do you want some?
Exactly.
When they mic'd up the referee, do you want some?
Fundamentally, Sunday morning football was alive and well and living in Doha, which is just a bizarre experience. But he nearly lost this title for me because of course, what happened is the hit list. But they didn't do the cup presentation because Michael McIntyre's programme was on, and Andrew Robertson, to his shame, said, I quite like Michael McIntyre in the post-match interview.
Well, another very deserving candidate. I might throw in a third one here because as well as there are a lot of sports I really like and other sports I don't really like, one of the ones I really, really like, but I don't know why, is weightlifting. I love weightlifting, men's and women's weightlifting. When people
snatch,
of course, I like the sport first, as they say.
Yeah.
And the
by round.
these cubic people come out, fling this thing above their head. A little bit of blood runs out their nose,
doesn't it,
from the blood pressure. But I'm making the point here that Danny Ings is now, as well as he is literally carrying Southampton Football Club on his back. And
nice.
I suggest we'll see a little bit of blood run out of Daniel Ings's nose very, very soon, just from the sheer effort. Last week,
does he put chalk on his hands before he started everything? The full works.
Oh, they've got the built-up shoes, haven't they? The thing they wear around their ample waist.
Yes.
Those wristbands, and then there's the kind of horrible mummy-like bandages that they wear on their hands.
Yeah.
Then the chalk. Ever thought about weightlifting, Dan?
Back.
Oh, not with his back.
Couldn't do it.
Who was the best weightlifter of any football you ever played? Because they're always lifting them in gyms, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know.
Who could bench press 400, as they say?
I went bad, actually.
Oh?
Yeah.
You're live, though.
The gun's on the Gabardon.
Ashley Williams, summit of a unit. He used to be must be out of bench press.
He had a bit of a struggle over the weekend, though, with that fellow who plays up front for Sheffield Wednesday, who was a good 6 inches taller than Ashley. Ashley had him for pace. But that wasn't what the game was about. The two of them wrestled each other before, and it wasn't Ashley's fault. Nehu, is he called?
Yeah.
He's a Kosovan centre-forward. Dive for the worst dive of the year for a penalty. But Danny Ings, I think it's 7 goals in 7 now, plus last week when he could have had 3, but the footballing goals were against him. I think all that he's gone through, because you know, I love picking holes in footballers, Dan. And if they want criticism, I'm your man. But I can't stand it when they're injured. It's not fair.
Yeah.
The thing that they bring to the world is their physical prowess and their physical gifts. And when I see players long-term injured, it breaks my heart, actually, because they're only going to get to play for 8 or 9 years. And if one of those is spent stretched out, it's a real shame. And Danny Ings has come back from a succession of various injuries to be a brilliant, brilliant player. And I think this show normally doesn't break stride, but I think we do need to break stride, because I think Miguel Almirón, beautifully described by Daniel, Andy Robertson, of course, anyone who's threatening to give someone one is all right with us.
It's all right.
And Danny Ings, they would all be really good heroes of the week. But I'm afraid that the shadow of a giant falls across this section of the show this week. Mark, you support West Ham.
Yes, indeed.
I support the mighty Tottenham Hotspur. So both of us were extraordinarily lucky to have a player in our ranks who went on to be, of course, a legend at a third club at Norwich City. The hero of the week is Martin Peters.
He is. I mean, this is, you know, 31 he went to Norwich and played 200 games.
And he gets in their all-time 11.
At 31, you disappear up in the roof in Logan's Run, don't you? Yeah. It's all over. You're done for. This doesn't happen. Martin Peters, I'm just at the wrong age to have got Martin Peters as a West Ham player.
Yeah.
But of course, but like anybody of any generation, on a kind of pop cultural level, we all know who he is because he was one of the men that won the World Cup for us. But of course, the great thing about, I mean, Peters wore 16. And that meant in that World Cup, in that 66 squad, that as far as Alf Ramsey was concerned, he was second string.
He was the last real arrival in the team except for Roger Hunt when Greaves got his injury. Peters was a right-footed player. He was really competing with Nobby Styles to play right half. Then
nothing like each other.
Then they decided that he was going to play the wide left and the rest is history. And I might give you a personal reminiscence about this. When I was 12 or 13, whenever it was, that Martin Peters was still the king of the world at West Ham United, my hero, beyond all others, was Jimmy Greaves. We went to bed very early, partially to give my parents some time off from a huge household of children. Often we'd go to bed at 6 o'clock in the evening and put us to bed.
Take shifts.
I remember my dad coming in. This is how highly rated Martin Peters was. Jimmy Greaves was the best striker England had ever seen.
Yeah.
And my dad came to our bedroom one night at 10 o'clock. My twin brothers were asleep on the other side of the room. And he woke me up to tell me that Jimmy Greaves had been transferred out of Tottenham.
Swap deal.
Absolutely.
Swap deal.
So important did Spurs think Martin Peters was going to be. They were prepared to give up Jimmy Greaves for him. And he didn't want me to hear this at school. I'll also say this.
It was $200,000 for Martin Peters and £50,000.
It's the British record at the time.
For Jimmy Greaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But after the World Cup, Alf Ramsey said that Martin Peters was 10 years ahead of his time. In fact, Martin Peters was exactly 50 years ahead of his time. I'll tell you what I mean by that, Danny. The way the football's gone now, 4-2-3-1, on the left-hand side of that three, he would be as good as any player currently playing the game, with maybe the exception of Raheem Sterling. His ability to play, and this was in a time when everyone was trying to break your back while you played, was undoubted. His bravery was fantastic. And you're going to, I know I'll make you cry what I'm going to say next. He was the best player coming in on the far post to score a goal with his head until Gary Speed came along.
Yeah.
He had exactly that same gift that Speedo had of finding...
Arriving late from nowhere,
And for all of you listening, of course, the other thing that needs to be said about Martin Peters, I've now been online for nearly a day reading and listening to tributes about him. Not one person has got a bad word to say about the fella as a bloke. Just a great bloke as well.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you missed him. You're right, you just... 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I just
I caught him at his absolute peak.
It's indelible in my memory as that England man more, but of course, you know, the fact he went at the Spurs is neither here nor there, especially because in his latter years, I used to see him up top at Upton Park and London Stadium singing Bubbles next to his missus.
And of course,
so I'll take that.
He was even on the Spurs board at one stage.
Yeah.
And then Alan Sugar reminded us of that the other day as well. So our hero of the week, despite the sterling efforts of Miguel Almirón, you can relax now. Joel Linton's going to have to get the goals from now on. Andy Robertson, well done, talking behind his hand. And Danny Ings, our hero of the week, the late, great, lamented Martin Peters. Okay, let's get back onto the part of the show that I know one of you enjoy most, our villain of the week. Mark, why don't you start this time?
Well, I'm going to go with, and as much as anything else, for the sport of it, is Mikel Arteta. And I'll tell you for why, is that he was the man who was meant to be the Arsenal manager last time out, and Unai Emery got it. It was that apparently that close in the vote.
Yep.
December the 1st was the time that we saw his name in the frame as coming into the Arsenal job. We know full well that he kind of hoped that his name would be the incumbent for the Man City job. Didn't get that promise, so therefore there was the idea that he gets this next job. So on Friday morning, he takes a press conference in which he's laying out his vision and his plan for Arsenal. Arsenal are training.
Yep.
Go and train them.
Yep.
And walk out with them at Goodison Park.
Why does he need to watch them from the stand? The previous week, he'd been sat in a technical dugout staring at them.
It's not like there's not a lot of data that he might not have available to hand that he could actually put Freddie Ljungberg out of his misery. And
poor
rather
Freddie.
Than stare yeah. down on that abysmal game of football...
More about that later.
Michael O'Neill did this when he got the Stoke job.
Yeah.
I think he went on the Thursday, training on the Friday, managed them on the Saturday. Why didn't Arteta just
big
grab
dunk.
The football?
It's the big dunk factor, I think.
Really?
On the touchline there with just the shirt and the tie on and stuff. I think he was a little bit intimidated.
He didn't want to take that on.
He didn't want to take that on.
That's double villain then.
But do you
double villain.
In that case, do you think that Ancelotti spun out the negotiations
oh, yes.
what appeared like 3 weeks so as to be able to tell Duncan Ferguson, all right, you have one more game, Dunk, and then I'll take over.
I think he probably negotiated with Big Dunk. He was doing negotiations.
Matter of interest,
with him.
How big a job has Arteta got at Arsenal? In theory,
big.
One of the biggest clubs in the world.
Yeah.
They take more money still through the gate than any club in the world every fortnight, I think. How big, Danny?
Very big, yeah. Look, I don't think they can get any worse, to be honest with you. I think with the squad that they have, they are underachieving. So I can see him going in there and getting them more organised and bringing that winning mentality that he's had from Man City under Pep and improving them. But.
I was gambling.
To what level?
You know, yeah, exactly.
Where do they need to get
I know Gary Neville was trying to be a comedian when he said if you'd set out to buy the flakiest centre-halves in Europe and gather them all in one club, Arsenal have done that. Yeah. But you can tell me, you play that position.
They are.
How hard is it to find people who defend goals, who can defend... rubbish.
I thought you were going to say, how hard is it to actually go out and find the worst centre-halves that are available and buy them?
No, the opposite, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
How hard is it to go and find people who want to defend their goal?
It's more difficult now. Because more and more teams now, it is about scoring goals. I don't
right.
think you see as many top centre-halves. Now, they are hard to find, to be honest with you, but Arsenal have been very poor at doing that. And for years, even when I was playing against them, they always had that flaky nature to them. You always thought you could go there and
it's amazing how it becomes endemic of a football club, a kind of an idea about them. And the thing is, the worry I would have if I was an Arsenal man is that the thing that you'd have thought Freddie Ljungberg would have got would have been a bit of a bump from players going, he's one of, you know, here's a guy, he's young, we'll go and play for him.
The real problem for Arsenal fans with this appointment, and I'm sure that they love him because he was a good player and a captain for them, is this. Arsenal, as we have said, have made a dog's ass of buying centre-halves.
Yeah.
They've now imported a manager from a club and a philosophy born out of Barcelona, which doesn't even believe in centre-halves.
Absolutely no interest in centre-halving.
Yeah. No, they genuinely believe that one midfielder and a centre-half will do, or as we saw during their recent injury crisis, play no centre-halves and see how that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. Of course, every time a new manager comes, you get... Oh, of course, he looks a bit like Action Man. My favourite, though, is the one that the official portrait that Arsenal put out of him, holding that football in front of himself with the red tie.
Yeah.
People said, hang on, is this computer-generated? If you put in Spanish football manager template one, you would get Mikel Arteta. He just looks like Spanish football manager template one.
He did like you were about to play him on a video game, didn't he?
It
unfortunately,
did.
Which is... But listen, it felt it was a weird game, Everton-Arsenal, wasn't it? Because in the stands with Ancelotti and Arteta were the two men that could very easily have been in either job.
And it would have made more sense, in theory.
Yeah.
We'll come on to that game a little later. Can I say that my villain of the week, and I stand to be shouted at by Marco, who seems to have enjoyed it, is the World Club Championship.
Cracking game of football, Dan.
Now, I'm old enough to remember when the World Club Championship was played over two legs, I think, to recall, between the champions of Europe and the champions of South America. Back in the day, Manchester United, when they were champions of Europe, for the first time, played Estudiantes de la Plata, the students of the River Plate, big club in Argentina at the time, in two games that were, I think, possibly the dirtiest games of football ever played. The South Americans played every dirty trick in the book. Manchester United's team were perfectly happy to respond in kind. And for the next 15 years, we kind of turned our eyes away from that. And that's continued. In Britain, we just don't value the World Club Championship. All it ever is a bind, isn't it? Remember Manchester United having to cancel their third round FA Cup. They pull out the FA Cup to do it. More recently, Klopp complaining bitterly about it. But I don't see it. What I called it earlier on, it's a charity shield for overseas people. You get Liverpool parachute in the middle of the season straight into the semi-final, by the way, and then they play a final. The European clubs have won 12 of the last 13. Of course they have. These are the teams who win the Champions League are world 11s, aren't they? Playing Brazilian players who haven't quite escaped from Brazil yet or weren't good enough when they got to Europe. And some of them are also wearing scrum half hats for reasons that was never quite explained to me, unless it was a Peter Cech thing and we shouldn't be taking the mickey out of it. I just don't get it, but I think I might be a dinosaur here because I wonder, Danny, whether these games where you see a stadium in an obscure footballing part of the world with lots of overseas people wearing half and half scarves to a massive television audience, a massive television audience, by the way, which happens to suit Western Europe for timing, maybe we're seeing the future of football and these world leagues that they want to put on.
I think that is the way that it's going to go, isn't it? I think it is all money-driven now, the game. Talk of the European Super League and stuff like that. So I think it is the way things are going to go. But I think Liverpool obviously never won the trophy in their history. So
I know,
you could see
well done to win it. Yeah.
What it meant to them, the way they kind of celebrated after. I don't know if I would have probably celebrated the same. Actually, wouldn't have seen the same importance. But to them, it was a big thing. And Klopp made it into a big thing as well.
And here's the thing. I listened to the first half on TalkSport and it sounded like a good game of football. I watched the second half. It was a good game of football. Yep. I was comfortable if it didn't make it into extra time. You know, I mean, I'm not an extra time kind of guy.
You were mad for Michael McIntyre, to be fair.
I cannot wait to see his wobbly chops talking about all them hilarious middle class hamster.
You're still doing five spice, isn't he?
I like to think so. But I'm not prepared.
I've got nothing against Michael McIntyre. Massive Spurs fan, by the way. And I remember on his way up, when he wasn't quite Michael McIntyre, king of the universe. He would often be interviewed on the touchline at half time at White Hart Lane as a puddin'.
Oh,
absolutely beside himself with drink.
I'm suddenly warming to him a little bit more.
He goes to the football, have a load of lager, and then come out and say, "Come on, you Spurs!" and all that. It was great.
I have emotional problems with it because it was probably 10 years ago when he sort of launched and he had like posters everywhere and he's got DVD just sold zillions.
Yes. So I thought, it outsold your DVD.
It did by... as many
millions.
As it was, minus two. Because I didn't know. But the tragedy was, so we're visiting the families, and I went round one of the son's house, and he's got the mic. I said, why have you got this? He said, I know you wouldn't like him. I know you're coming in. So he's moaning at me for me moaning that he's got the mic. So we go, and then we visit another one of the kids' house on Boxing Day. I said, why have you borrowed that stupid DVD off your brother? He said, I haven't. That's my one. Two of my three sons owned that Michael McIntyre DVD.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Clearly, it has resonated with me. I don't know if you're getting that.
Yeah, I do.
It was a really good game of football, Dan.
Yeah, OK.
And Flamengo absolutely made it fun. But apart from that...
I mean, Michael McIntyre was my favourite celebrity Spurs fan for a little while because of his drunken antics on the side of the pitch. Then Adele came along, and she's mad for the Spurs, and so all that was good.
Oh, Adele
but
wins.
I've now moved up, though.
Oh.
Paul Anderson, Arthur from Peaky Blinders, is a big Spurs fan, it turns. I saw him at the side of the pitch the other day being interviewed. When did Peaky Blinders start supporting Spurs? That's the big moment. Now, this has been quite a confusing show. Danny Kelly, Daniel Gabadon, Danny Ings, you want to complain about another person named after the biblical character.
I do, Daniel.
Yeah. Sir, pardon?
I won't say that again.
No, don't. You carry on.
Did I get that wrong?
No, you did really well.
Daniel Gabadon, why are you complaining about Daniel Farke? Because all he's had so far in his career is endless praise.
Plaudits.
Yeah. I just think the stubbornness with his football philosophy for me is going to... send Norwich back down to the Championship.
So there's a lot of people would say, but that's a great thing. That's a good thing. The man's sticking by his principles. But are you saying that there's a line? Me. Yeah,
I think there is. I think the good managers, they adjust as well. When things are not going right, you make the necessary. You look at Frank Lampard today.
No.
Three at the back. Worked ever so well against Tottenham. And I think you look at the contrast as well. Sheffield United, they have their own unique way of playing.
But has he got the... I mean, aside from that astonishing performance with all the midfield players playing at the back against Manchester City, has he got the players to do anything different?
I think he can. I think you can get them organised on a training ground. Chris Wilder's done that with Sheffield United. Players from the lower leagues. And he's admitted himself that he's had to adjust things, that they play this unique style of football. But for the Premier League, from the Championship, we had to adjust one or two things because of the step up in class and quality. And for me, Norwich should be doing the same. I think 14 of their 18 games, they've conceded more than two goals, Norwich. So,
and this must be very hard work for Todd Cantwell and Timo Pukki. Exactly. You've done everything could be expected of them.
And they've got
the
goal scorers. They've got goal scorers in those two guys.
And they're also down, I think, statistically. They keep taking the lead and losing the match. That's almost impossible to do statistically in the Premier League.
Unless Norwich want to be a yo-yo team. I don't know. Maybe that's part of their plan.
I can't imagine it's supposed to be part of the plan, but...
it's interesting, Farker, because, of course, we're only, whatever period it would have been ago, is one game away from getting sacked. Because they were so far down the Championship.
Yeah, they played.
Then
Ipswich,
up they come.
They,
so it's it's yo-yo. It's a yo-yo roller coaster ride. I don't even that can happen in science.
No,
it?
I think physically, by which I mean by the laws of physics, you cannot
would
be
you
a yo-yo
like
roller coaster.
Someone doing a yo-yo on a roller coaster.
Yes,
is
I would
all
indeed.
I want to see.
Yeah, particularly the bit where they rolls over and over again. Where would the string
special.
Go? I mean, you realise that Gabadon's so young he doesn't know what a yo-yo is. You do know that, don't you?
I do. I had one. I think as a kid.
Of course, I had a yo-yo.
All right, who's our villain of the week? The World Club Championship, Daniel Farke or Miguel Arteta, sitting as standard Spanish football manager template one in the stands at Goodison Park. Danny, do you want to change your vote?
I see. I'm not so strong on Arteta. I kind of was. I was really big on this when there was the conspiracy theory, or perhaps it was true, that he'd influenced Freddie Ljungberg's lineup by saying I wouldn't mind seeing X, Y, and Z playing.
And also, throw Ozil under the bus after the game, which he did.
That is, exactly, yeah. So I don't know if he's proven to be sort of like, you know, he's already kind of deferring control. But that's just conjecture. That might be more smoke than mirrors than the truth.
Danny,
so
I asked you, and he's answering the question. Where do you want to go with this?
I'm basically knocking off Arteta. I'm leaving it to
right.
you two.
Oh, what, so we just, what, you're not?
Now, the World Club Championship is going to have it, isn't it?
I feel bad already about
I'll
it.
Go, I'll go
he's got lovely
club,
hair.
I'll go World Club Championship, I think.
Oh. And I'll absolutely accept that as well.
Yes, he will.
And don't forget, it's getting worse. Is it 2022? It's a 24-team tournament.
Really?
All of this is designed not to spread the game around the world, but to destroy the power of the Premier League. And you watch, mark my words.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at Ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
McBurney struggling against Lewis up. Gets past him. Oh, and what a finish from Ollie McBurney. In off the post.
It's Deeney right down the middle. And Watford lead by 2-0.
Well, he has made City wait nearly 9 months for a goal here. But finally, in the month of December, Jesus has delivered at Christmas.
Hey, welcome back to the Game Day Record Book podcast. I'm Danny Kelly. Alongside me, I'm delighted to say, in the festive mood of the studio, I've got Mark Webster, broadcaster extraordinary, and the former Wales international Daniel Gabaldon. Don't forget that our sister Game Day podcast, the Premier League preview show, is coming out a bit, because of the festivities, coming out a bit earlier this week. Sam Matterface, Paul Parker and Tom Rennie. Fantastic lineup. You can get that podcast Tuesday morning, 5 a.m. In fact, I think you should get up, especially
definitely
to get it on Tuesday morning, which means that us three, three wise men, three kings, if you like, in the studio now have to do our best performance of the week. And I think, Mark, you wanted to start this because you think that the team or person you're going to talk about for best performance of the week is overlooked unfairly.
Yeah, pure frankincense, pursuing your analogy. Yes, I've gone for Man City.
Yeah.
Now, which is a stupid idea, based on the fact
that both Daniels now waving their heads from side to side.
It's never getting picked.
Well, they're really, really good. They're really good, everyone, aren't they?
Well,
I think we can all agree with that.
Expected to win at home against Leicester, though.
Right, and there's where I found
that. Are they not
a
mile behind Liverpool at the table?
But this was the thing. Man City at home, wobbling away. Like the wheels on the bus are not going round and round anymore at all. They lose Mikel Arteta in the week, so the boss loses his right hand man.
Although the body language at the Emirates the previous week suggested that there was no love lost there, because the two of them didn't make any contact during the course of that game.
So then, okay, even more so. The Cold War had already begun.
Yep.
Pep makes the, and we all know that Pep has got noises in them that says, do you know how little interest I have this anymore? And by various ways of saying things. Then it's Leicester, high-flying, above them.
Yeah.
They go a goal ahead.
I love Mark, but Danny, I agree. Why is he even bothering to say these words?
No.
I really don't know.
So Man City are meant to implode after they dominate for 15 minutes. Mahrez is enjoying playing against his old club like the Clappers. Jamie Vardy scores. What is meant to happen then?
That was the most Jamie Vardy goal of all time as well, wasn't
Vardy
it?
Goals
God,
go,
he's brilliant.
Pretty Vardy. But Man City went on and win it. And not did they go on and win it. They win it in a disciplined kind of way that has not been seen of recent times. I thought it was very impressive.
Dear.
That's got no chance. Have you got any more? Anything else to say there, Marco? Is that it?
My Lord, is that? I'm out before I even started. The shame and ignorance
like
of it all.
It is to Manchester City's honour that we all think they should be beating Leicester happily at home every time. In matter of interest, there's still the highlight for me was Jamie Vardy's goal. You must have overlapped
great
with Vardy.
Finish.
You must have played against
him.
He's quick, fast. But how fast? Because, he may not be as fast as Raheem Sterling, but the directness of his runs, and he always cuts off the defender. He did it again. He takes his touch, takes him across the defender. He says, go on then, bring me down. And he never misses.
Yeah, it's like the timing of his movement as well.
Yeah.
He's quick, but it's the positions that he gets in. And well, when I played against him, I wouldn't say nobody. He was at Leicester, but he wasn't really. He was coming on sub then and stuff, so he wasn't the player he was now. But it's a great run, great finish, and the ball just sits up nicely for him, doesn't it? Just to allow him to dink.
You
it
could
over
see
the
that it could go just as wrong as it went right, though, couldn't it? Unless you've got the magic touch,
he's got better and better at finishing,
hasn't he?
He always got in those positions, and now he hardly ever misses. He is remarkable.
I should point it to back up my story. That boy De Bruyne, he's going to have
it again.
He's going to have a career on him, isn't he? I watched him. I thought, you know what? That kid De Bruyne, he's going to be quite handy. So anyway, Man City.
It was interesting, though, because it was contrasting halves in that game, where I thought first half, Man City looked like first season Pep a little bit, with that high line. That goal Vardy scored was similar to what Leicester did to them in that first season.
Defending on the edge of their 18 yards.
And then when they got in front, then you saw
Daniel Gabaldon's coming round to my argument,
slightly,
is he?
God, you're weak, Daniel. I'm
trying to help him.
He looked into my eyes.
Not around the eyes, into the eyes. Daniel, you want to nominate another team in the Premier League, but I also know there's a bit of side to this, because you're nothing if not a proud Welshman. Tell us about your best performance of the week.
It's got to be Sheffield United.
They're unreal, aren't they?
It's got to be. Fifth in the Premier League now, unbeaten away from home. Three wins on the bounce and another win yesterday, obviously against Brighton. And Chris Wilder's just doing a sensational job with that group of players. They're just punching above their weight. And I just think...
And they're also giving such a lesson to the two other teams who came up with them.
How to do
Aston
it, yeah.
Villa,
yeah.
And, of course, Norwich City. I must admit, I'd love to tell you, and I'd be the first to tell you if I'd predicted this, I couldn't see this at all. I thought, yeah, overlapping centre-halves. Most coaches will find, have a one session with a blinking whiteboard and say, right, Ozil, we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. It's their team spirit. It's their togetherness.
Yeah.
It's the fact that, you know, David McGoldrick never scores, but no one ever shouts at him because he's doing other things to help the rest of the team. Yeah. They are a great unit.
Yeah, they've got the perfect mix of everything. You know, they can mix it physically. Obviously, they can play football. But, you know, this system, they've been working on it for quite a long time. I remember when Chris Wilder got the Sheffield United job in League One, and he had a bit of a ropey start. Didn't start too well with results, and he switched to this back three, and that got them promoted. So that's where... You know, they've been playing this system for a long time.
Now, you have got your expensive league acquired coaching badges, Daniel. What would you do to stop Sheffield United? Is it possible to stop them?
It's very difficult to stop them. Because, as I said, they can beat you in a lot of different ways. You know, defensively strong. They overload you in wide areas. You know, they score goals. Even the manager's even kind of dreaming about who he's going to play the next day and stuff. He obviously came out and said about Ollie McBurney. Had a little premonition about him. Stuck him in and he scored as well. So he can do no wrong. And they're just a well-oiled kind of team.
If Chris Wilder is coming off the page and starting to talk about what he's seeing in the tea leaves, you know he's having too much fun already, don't you?
I've played in teams that have gone up from the Championship to the Premier League. And it's so, so difficult to pick up results. And even more so kind of away from home. Yeah. So for them to be still unbeaten away from home is incredible.
So we're all admitting this is a tremendous surprise to everybody, but not to you, apparently.
No,
because
he's made in Wales, isn't he?
What do you mean by this?
Well, he did his coaching badges with the FAW. So,
and he's not the only one, is he? There's quite the list. I mean, Arteta's another one, wasn't he?
Arteta's another one.
So where does this all happen?
There's two places.
Uh-huh. Municipal swimming baths in Pontypridd. I'm getting. I took a punt there.
Yeah, well, I think they use the Vale of Glamorgan Hotel, and they've also got the kind of FAW headquarters.
You didn't
in
do
Newport
your badges
well.
In Wales, no?
No, I did mine in Ireland. Shh, don't say anything.
No, so that's when you become a great manager. Yeah. I'll be claiming you as well.
Yeah, I like it.
Why did you do them in Ireland? Is it cheaper?
No, just the Guinness, I think.
The Guinness. Where does that go on then? Obviously in Dublin.
Dublin, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well,
basically,
they are.
I was at Crystal Palace and one of the Irish lads was jumping on the course and he said, does anybody want to kind of come and do it with me? And three or four of us did it, went over, really
enjoyed
it.
And he woke up 3 days later and he had his coaching badges.
It is literally like, you coach for a few hours and then, like, where are we going tonight?
I think we all should mention as well in the performances of the week, Watford.
They are
statistically, they of course are coming up to Christmas, the worst team in the Premier League. I think most of us have a kind of idea they can't be that bad. Some of these players weren't so terrible until about 4 weeks before the FA Cup final last year when they all knocked off. Then they got themselves murdered in their sleep in the FA Cup final, and it's taken them a long time to come around. Nigel Pearson seemed to me to be a very odd choice as manager. But everybody who worked with him at Leicester says, no, he's a great coach. I think also the coincidence of the return of Troy Deeney. Now, Troy is probably not the physical animal, the incredible footballer he was 2 years ago, shall we say. But he has come back into the team. And I think that Daniel, I'm going to call you Danny. The thing about Troy Deeney and players like him is it's not just what they do physically around the pitch. There's something else that comes out of them, their spirit. Their DNA in the club brings something else, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's his mentality as well. You know, he looks after everyone. He puts everyone in, pulls everyone.
Can you think of an example from your own career of somebody who was pulling a club or a team along?
Captains I've played for, Lucas Neal at West Ham. Was outstanding, Australian. Just
what
had that
tremendously
tough,
dirty player he was.
Yeah, tough mentality. You know,
I think say he was Australian was enough. Really, he just covered that nicely. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think he probably had a career choice any time between association football and rugby league.
Yeah.
And he didn't really bother.
Didn't make the choice.
Scott Parker again.
Go on.
Different kind of captain, but one that would kind of lead with the performances and you know, would kind of make you.
He's
kind
doing
of play
great
as
well,
well
now as a manager.
Yeah,
I wasn't
he is.
So he's
he
got
is.
Mitrovic.
You
as
imagine
helped.
That would translate, wouldn't you? Yeah.
So Nigel Pearson and Troy Deeney against a Manchester United side. They were on the resurgence. They'd beaten Manchester City, the great Manchester City, and they'd beaten Spurs, the great Tottenham Hotspur. And suddenly, I think the questions are all right out again for Manchester United now after this defeat by Watford. He keeps making two steps up the ladder and two slides down the snake, doesn't he?
Is it that surprising given the fact that on the same day we saw a mercurial Chelsea against, as you mentioned there, the aforementioned Tottenham? And of course, what you give Frank Lampard gets a break because he's a young manager with a young team. And guess what everyone says? Young managers, young teams, it's going to be patchy. Are United not still kind of in that situation?
They are, except I was absolutely shocked to note that on the day of this defeat at Watford, it was a year in charge for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. It feels like 3 months, but the world moves
very
quickly.
That's a good
quickly.
Point, yeah.
He's had 1 year and they are exactly the same clunky team, liable to go bang away from home, particularly at the back.
They don't have any leadership. You were speaking about captains.
Right.
I look in that United team and look, he's tried to change the dress room kind of philosophy and thinking by bringing in young, motivated, hungry players, which I think to a certain extent is good, but you've got to have that. Those experienced heads kind of around you, and they just don't have that. And you need a goalkeeper that can catch the ball as well.
He has now made more mistakes leading to goals than any other player in the Premier League in the last whatever time of measuring over. And he's one of the highest paid footballers.
And they pitched their
in the land,
didn't they? They really
very,
did.
Very strange indeed. Because we've mentioned this before on this podcast, Danny, that if goalkeepers fall off very high levels of form, unlike outfield players who tend to get it back, goalkeepers tend not to do it. Look at Joe Hart, the way he just suddenly faded. And David De Gea is having a difficult 2.5 years in and around the Spanish team and Manchester United. All right, our best performances. Manchester City.
Come on, it's that plucky side
proving
from the
that
other
they're
side
a decent
of Manchester
team.
In
and
the light
apparently
blue.
This boy, Kevin De Bruyne, is going to be a player as well.
You watch him.
You had to come with something, a different angle, something left field there with that game for that to get picked, and he didn't. Well,
they beat Leicester.
Sheffield United's performance in and of itself, and because it was made in Merthyr Tydfil or somewhere.
Yeah, true.
Or Watford with their new manager and the return of their captain.
Oh, it's a close one.
Well,
it's a close one.
I've got to say, I can't.
You choose.
I'm leaning on Sheffield United simply because they never fail to impress. And I thought going to Brighton was going to be a tough ask for them. I think Graham Potter looks like he could be a manager incarnate who could do really well back in English football. And Brighton at home could have given them a proper test. And guess what? They did it again.
Yeah, and I'm totally in agreement with that. Fun though Manchester City were seeing them playing properly again, and Mahrez in particular. And great to see Watford showing that they're not actually moribund. No one wants teams to be really cut adrift at the bottom. It's too boring. But Sheffield United, definitely the performance of the week. And now on to one of the most hotly contested, I think this week, perhaps the most hotly contested category we've ever had on the Game Day Record Book podcast, with our worst performances of the week. I'm going to start because it's my turn to go first, I think. It's a double whammy. Two teams performing at such a level that the match has been speculated in social media and beyond as perhaps the worst game ever in the Premier League. And so much so that the two managers, and you'll know which game I'm talking about, the one at Goodison Park, the two managers, both of whom have yet to step foot on the training pitch, where people were saying, Ancelotti out and Arteta, the template Spanish league manager number one, out before they've even got a go. Everton 0, Arsenal 0, both sides lucky to get 0, and afterwards, all the fans, the Arsenal fans could do was to turn on Arsenal fan TV.
Yes.
I don't know if you all saw that.
They started to eat themselves. It was a sight for sore eyes.
I mean, the Premier League is the thing that it is around the world because its games, by and large, even if they start a bit slowly because everyone's so fit they're cancelling each other out, by the end of them, something amazing has happened. A great goal has happened. The two teams have worn themselves into a nub and you'll get a late flurry or something. Even, and the game at White Hart Lane the stuff off the pitch notwithstanding, showed that the chaos of the Premier League is also great fun. But this thing just strolled by minute after minute, nothing happening.
I mean, it's the half 12 kickoff, Dan, which is famously meant to be a bit of a damn squib.
Players hate early kickoffs.
I'm sorry about that,
Dan. It's a routine.
Routine. Routine mainly.
Got you out of bed early, did we? Sorry about that.
I mean, the fans hate it because you can't go to the pub for 3 hours beforehand.
Paid money for our tickets. But how could these two sets of players get it so horribly wrong in the situation that both teams were?
It just happens sometimes, isn't it? I think two teams lacking confidence. You know, managers watching from the stand. I don't know if they felt under pressure to perform or something. I don't know. If I was a manager or a new manager watching from the stand and seeing that, I'd be like, I got my work.
Explain something to me, Danny, and I'm genuine. I mean, this programme tends to like to go off on mad tirades and stuff. I genuinely want to know this. Why do you bother training footballers? Because the whole point of training, from the military down to the most basics of ping pong players, is that you replicate your skills under pressure, under fire. Footballers, first sign of anything going wrong, oh no, I can't play anymore, my confidence is shot. Why do you bother to train?
I don't know. We're prima donnas, though, aren't we?
No, why wouldn't those players be able to go out and play yesterday?
Well, they should be able to. They're doing one of the best jobs in the world. But sometimes, you know, as I say, kind of lack of confidence. It's not like you're not kind of trying as a player.
I never worry that they're not trying. It's just that when they are trying, they're no good.
I must say, I think Duncan Ferguson celebrated like he got exactly what he wanted, which is basically 3 games, didn't lose one.
Yeah.
And he would take that against an Arsenal side being looked up by their new manager.
But actually, let's be honest, Duncan's 3 performances, they've got worse and worse, haven't they, Everton?
It's kind of becoming diminishing returns.
Heading back down to where they were when he got the gig. Look, I don't think it'll win because there are much more exciting candidates. But a game where both sets of players, I mean, both the managers, I wonder if they ever caught each other's eye up there in the stand and going, bloody hell, you're a lot of useless, aren't they? I mean, of course, both of them, of course, Ancelotti and Arteta would have loved it because they can only improve on that, can't they? They would have loved it. That's how they want them to play on that day. What's your choice, Daniel? And I'm taking 2 steps back from the microphone here, putting on my protective clothing.
Dan's got the winner, if you don't mind me saying. But I don't want to preempt
Thanks,
anything.
Mr. West
Ham. Over to the winner.
I did have Aston Villa, but then I covered the Tottenham Chelsea game.
Chelsea weren't that bad.
And Tottenham were poor. I didn't see that result coming. Obviously, Mourinho, 4 wins out of 5. I'm not saying they've been perfect performances, but I didn't think they would be that disorganised, lacking ideas, couldn't keep the football. You know, 2 or 3 passes, giving it away. And Chelsea just dominated in every single department
I was on air during that game, Danny, and I kept looking up to the screen, and Chelsea appeared to have the ball in Spurs' third for all of the first
half.
They did.
It was incredible pressing performance by the blue team.
Yeah, all-round performance with and without the ball. Tactically, you know, Frank Lampard got it spot on, changed the system, went to 3 at the back. It worked a treat that Kane couldn't get hold of the ball. You know, you had centre-backs around him. The midfield area, Kovacic in there. Mason Mount was causing havoc. I don't know why Mourinho didn't do something about him. He kept picking the ball up in pockets, turning and running. Eric Dier and Sissoko just did not work.
Good news for Eric Dier, though. Managed to stay on during the whole of the first half. Yeah.
Dele Alli, I do not know what his role was, where he was playing. Really strange position he was playing in. You know, defensively as well.
I mean, if you add to that the fact that, as I always say, whenever this game comes up, it's the game I dread, not the Arsenal game, or certainly not the West Ham game, the game I dread every year, the 2 games against Chelsea, because over the last 20 years, Spurs have just found new and novel ways to lose that game. And I mean it. I mean, today, you had the sending off of Son, the most mild-mannered footballer in the world, gets himself sent off, and deservedly so. And then, what did Paolo... Someone try and describe, for those who are listening...
I just clarify on Son? My new favourite stat ever is that he has one equal in terms of red cards and period of time in which he got them. Lee Catamol.
Okay, well,
when have those two names ever been mentioned in the same breath?
Let's just say Lee will be pleased with it.
Delighted.
What was Paolo Gazzaniga doing for the penalty? Anybody?
I don't know. I really don't
know. That's bizarre.
You're a goalkeeper. You've got hands. Use them. I know, obviously, the modern-day goalkeeper
is
encouraged to use his feet, but not when the ball's in the catching zone. It was
what about when Anthony Taylor gave it as a foul?
That was a marvellous. It's always the keeper's always been fouled, isn't he? That's always the rules.
The ball went over the top, and I think it was Sanchez chasing back.
Yeah.
Gazzaniga comes out. It's one of them as a defender where you just turn away. You turn away and get ready to walk
yes,
the field because
you
think
the,
your goalkeeper's
the game's
just,
moving on, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
You think the keeper's just going to collect that and you're getting ready for him to roll it out to you, or he's going to kick it up the field. Next you know, there's the crowd all going. I don't know what he was doing.
It was
the worst bit of goalkeeping.
It was a horrible mess.
It is fun when, I say, I was broadcasting on the national broadcasting here at TalkSport. And it is fun, though, when you're still a fan of the club and you're being asked to describe what's going on. And I saw the thing going, it slowed down several times. And the best I could do was, well, in the middle of that, Alonso's hand does make contact with his face. But this is only after he's been kicked into orbit by the Spurs goalkeeper. The best I could manage was, maybe they've seen that.
The only thing I got from that, I was sort of swapping WhatsApps with my kids and they said, did you see it? And I couldn't work out to get the GIF. But it reminded me of in Alien, when the alien splats into John Hurt's face and impregnates him. And it's because he
this
kind
has gone
of like,
dark.
Because he comes at him like a kind of giant sort of like one-dimensional splodge.
How did it take the people at Stockley Park, wherever that is, so long to make the decision?
Because they're trying to get Anthony Taylor out of jail.
They are. They are indeed. I guess that's the perfectly logical explanation. So they got all the VAR things were right and Spurs were terrible. They're tactically terrible. Anything else? Any more knives you'd like to stick into my chest, Daniel?
No, I'm just surprised that The Apprentice kind of schooled the master and it was that easy.
It
was that easy.
Which
is a worry for me. Because Mourinho, tactically, you'd think the defensive side of the game normally is his strength.
And he's going to hate that, isn't he? Yeah.
And I think in a week where I think there was not enough celebration on the fact that Toby Alderweireld, I would suggest the second best central defender in the league, has re-signed for the club, the other side of that coin today, they were desperate for Eriksen and the things he does around the pitch. Spurs lack creativity when they start playing Dier and Sissoko, fun though Sissoko is to watch. As in the middle of midfield, and by the time Eriksen came on, let's be fair, the game, if not in reality at 2-0, the spirit of that game, you knew Spurs weren't coming back into that. There was no way. So a pretty strong case made there, though Spurs will never be the worst performance, because Mark's going to help us out here,
no,
isn't
he? No, I'm not. No, because this is thin gruel, I'm afraid.
Why?
But I'm going to do it anyway. Dean Smith got on my nerves, mainly because he did such a lovely thing in the week against the Liverpool kids when he played in the cup. He went to the dressing room to congratulate them all, and they walloped them. And you kind of think, okay, so Dean Smith, probably like Jurgen Klopp, is surely going to take from the Club World Cup, take that and use it for the rest of his season. Dean Smith took it and used it in the next game by losing at home in a six-pointer to Southampton. And they were absolutely slaughtered. Now, they lost McGinn early, and I'm sure that's clearly a factor in the game itself, but they've lost him for months.
Ongoingly, it's a disaster for them, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, and you know, you talked, Daniel, about Farker earlier on there. Dean Smith there should be more about this Villa side, shouldn't there? And so for me, they're an underachieving team. But to lose against a direct rival in a crucial game. But
if they won that game, they could have put Southampton down this weekend, I believe.
And put themselves somewhat out of sight.
Yeah, it's a big game for them. And I think for the money they spent, their recruitment's has been poor as well.
Right.
Heavily reliant on Grealish, I think he was their top goal scorer. I think it's like net 144 million, like the highest in the Premier League this season, with money spent, shipping goals in, conceding too many.
And you can only imagine he's got to spend more. They probably can't, can they? They're probably FFP.
Well, I hear about this. My colleague here at TalkSport, Simon Jordan, tells me he's seen the books and they shouldn't be under FFP problems because, you know, he said, how can a Premier League team ever become sanctioned for FFP? Because the money just keeps rolling and roaring in to the coffers. Danny, you talked about coming into the Premier League. Aston Villa I think, would have been of the three teams that came up, they would have won. Everyone thought they would be comfortable.
Yeah, 100%.
Because McGinn, because Grealish, because Tyrone Mings. And yet, of course, you know, it's an 11-man game. And you can't, the Premier League is, what's the word? It's vicious, isn't it?
It is.
If you've got any flaw,
you've got to get the balance right.
People go into it like frost into cracks, don't they?
And they're trying to play football. They got problems at both ends, really. Probably not scoring enough goals. Wesley hasn't really done it, has he?
No, that's true.
Conceding to make the Tyrone Mings injury annoyed me with Dean Smith a couple of weeks ago, where he goes down shot.
Left him on the field of play.
Because he's pulled his hamstring.
Yeah.
Leaves him on the field of play. Back on. They play it through the gap because he can't move. And Vardy scores and it's, you know, they're 1-0 down or whatever. And
but that's why you've got medical staff.
Exactly.
Surely.
But as a manager, you can see he's running down the line. He goes down. He's holding his hamstring. You know, and he should know he's pulled his hamstring. Get yourself off the
pitch. You're better off with 10 fit players on a pitch than one carrying an injury because they will leave gaps, aren't they?
And that's what happened. They scored as soon as he came on, and he was trying to almost blame Tyrone Mings then after by saying, well, he's never had that injury before, so he didn't know the feeling.
Well, thanks, Dr. Kildare.
I know. So he needs
Dr. Legg from EastEnders. There's one for the teenagers.
I was going to go with Villa into the top.
I was going to go Dr. Doolittle, actually, because Robert Downey's doing it. I saw him in the trailer before Star Wars. It looks like it could be quite good.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Have you seen this new Star Wars film then?
I did.
What? Did you think of it?
I'm not. I can't go around revealing all.
Oh, it's not out yet, no?
Yeah, it's out.
Yeah, so.
But, you know, but
I thought you said you were going to see Cats.
People need time. Yeah, that's right.
There's your worst performances, Everton and Arsenal, Aston Villa, or I think rather drearily, the actual winner, Tottenham Hotspur.
Come on, Danny. You know it's true.
All right. Sometimes you have to man up and suck it up. I, Danny Kelly, lifelong Tottenham Hotspur fan, occasional season ticket holder when work allows, believe that the worst performance of the week, by a country mile actually, was that nonsense that went on the pitch at the... whatever the stadium's called these days, White Hart Lane for me. And Spurs are the worst performers of the week. Are you all happy now?
Yeah, very. Delighted. Good.
Well, listen, it's been a fantastic show. Thank you very, very much indeed, Daniel Gabadon and Marcus Webster.
Nice. Extra syllable. I haven't got one.
All that remains for us to do, I think, at this time of year, of course, and genuinely, is to wish all of those of you who are bothered enough to download our podcast a very happy and then prosperous or holy, whatever it is you want your Christmas to be. I hope it will be. Same for you and your family, Mark.
Thank you very much indeed, and to you.
Same for you and your family, Daniel.
Merry Christmas to you, Danny.
Thank you very, very much indeed. We'll be back, of course, straight after Christmas with another award-winning Game Day Record Book podcast. Then, as I say, happy, happy Christmas to you all.
That was Game Day, the Record Book, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.